And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the Sunday, December 31st, end of the year edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Going to be with you for 3 to 4 hours today, beginning with recent news and some stories from the paper and some interviews from around town and around the community broadly, and then going into a flashback, which I shall describe later in the show. So stay with me, and in the meantime, if you have any tips on a 10x10 space for free radio, still, after all these months, it's becoming years soon, well, months, looking for a 10x10 studio space where you can earn $500 by tipping us off to such a place that we can keep for a year, rent for a year, give me a call at 423-4833. Again, 831-423-4833. That's also the number to call if you have information or reports on civil rights concerns, homeless news, stuff you think the community would be interested in that the normal media wouldn't, or if you're interested in free radio itself, if you'd like to be a part of our collective. This is my standard generic announcement at the beginning of every show or somewhere in the show, but I make it, and I hope you listen to it, and I hope if you are interested, you respond to it. 423-4833. Your other option is to go to freakradio.org, freakradio.org, and you can get information about the station's schedules for some of the shows, find some archives, and get downloadable information on how to actually apply for a membership in the collective, which we're very interested in expanding.
For while we are I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't.
So, welcome to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, last day in the year edition. Some of it recorded the day before. I'm still doing shows from my home, recording them and then posting them on the computer. Once we get a studio, we can actually restore the phone line. And I actually have some hopes of restoring the phone line before that time, if I can get the technical help to do so. I'm going to begin the show with by referring you to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. That's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz for those of you newcomers who've never seen that website. indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, small letters, all one word. I recently posted an article essentially reprinting what the police chief of Santa Cruz, Andy Mills, sent me a few days ago, a letter in response to some concerns from activist Steve Schnarr, who also posted a story on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Steve's letter is headed SCPD to co-sponsor MLK, Martin Luther King event, Questions for Chief Mills. And it's kind of summarized as an open letter to Chief Mills regarding the upcoming event on January 15th. March for the Dream, Honoring the Past, Impacting the Future, which is co-sponsored by the NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the Santa Cruz Police Department. Martin Luther King called for a revolution of values. Steve Schnarr writes, challenging the racism, militarism, and poverty central to American society. This letter asks how the SCPD, our local police, might contribute to this struggle for justice in light of its history, which often has run counter to these goals. And he makes a number of points in this letter, which is pretty long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I did post in response to it my an older flyer, which was somewhat updated, expressing a lot of concerns about the Santa Cruz Police Department that I've previously expressed on the air, expressed on the streets, expressed in letters and Public Records Act demands to the police department and the city agencies, expressed at city council, and so forth. But let me briefly summarize Steve Schnarr's concerns. Basically, Steve is asking, how are you going to further Martin Luther King's real dream, not the sanitized establishment fantasy or prop that it is essentially set up? King, Schnarr points out, was a radical, a nonviolent revolutionary who challenged the entire social order, I'm quoting from Steve Schnarr, focusing on what he called the giant triplets of racism, militarism, and poverty. How is Chief Mills and the SCPD going to essentially act in his tradition? Schnarr continues that the police play a huge role in enforcing and maintaining the edifice of inequality and poverty that we all live in, from the debtors' prisons and vagrancy laws of centuries ago, and attacks on striking workers, to the current harassment of unsheltered people across the U.S. for sitting, lying, or sleeping in public. Police have often acted as enemies of the poor. In Santa Cruz, Schnarr continues, I've watched for years as the police harass homeless people and push them around without any obvious purpose. Although many people seem to think such actions will make homeless people go away, in practice, these tactics have failed to address the negative impacts on public space while increasing the stress and suffering of those living on the streets. I am extremely impressed, however, Steve adds, and grateful that under your leadership, the SCPD has worked with the city manager, that's Martine Bernal, to pursue a different approach that includes, as part of the solution, offering a designated area for people to camp with increased sanitation and safety. And, of course, I would add here that I think Chief Mills' purpose has a lot to do with public relations, a lot to do with pleasing merchants and residents who want to see homeless people not in their neighborhoods or not visibly downtown during the Christmas holidays, and not so much truly gotten into housing or given the humane conditions necessary until that distant objective is actually obtained and not just talked about. In other words, I don't think that his really main objective, and I don't mean to be cruel or nasty to Chief Mills about this, I think it's just a matter of being realistic. He's the police chief. He's not a private radical who wants to fundamentally make the changes that actually might produce at least a space for people to be, and not just 57 chalk-delineated areas in San Lorenzo Park, soon to be turned into a gravel area less than half the size of the current San Lorenzo area that homeless people are allowed to be in, which has already been shrunk down to a smaller area than it was several months ago, with the so-called disc golf area out of bounds for the homeless to even be in, much less camp or sleep in. That's what I'm told, not by necessarily by Parks and Rec or by the police department, but by individual campers and by activists like Brent Adams, who spends a lot of time down there and who has in his own way been trying to make available, encourage the city to require services for people, that real services that are effective and not simply the semblance of services, the public relations puffy wuffy of services that looks and sounds good to middle class taxpayers but actually has little to do with really dealing with the majority needs, the most basic needs of poor and homeless folks outside, i.e. shelter, food, medical assistance, things of that sort. So while I think both Steve Schnarr and I and others, homeless people themselves, have commented favorably on the at least open area in San Lorenzo campground now more tightly restricted than before, but open at least to 57 tenths, which is about, oh, I don't know, 1/20th of the homeless population, maybe something like that in Santa Cruz. And if you add the number 100 beds available each night, a little bit more, at the Laurel Street Salvation Army shelter and the shelter down out on, I think it's 7th Avenue, then you've got 1/10th of the homeless population. That's a generous, well, yeah, about 1/10th of the homeless population offered shelter. And I guess, and you have something I've demanded for years, and apparently largely being followed, at least in terms of the technicalities of the actual camping ordinance and the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance itself, ticketing not being done at night for homeless people who fall asleep in Santa Cruz between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. I think it's actually 9 p.m. and, I don't know, 6 a.m. or thereabouts, something like the darkness hours. And similarly, Parks and Rec rangers are reportedly not giving citations to people on Parks and Rec property who leave early enough. But they're still confiscating property of people who don't get up quickly enough or people who fall asleep during the day in places they don't like. And it's being done, according to the few people I've talked to who gotten such citations, without much compassion, without much appreciation of the lack of alternatives people have, just as a sort of a routine punitive measure in the grand old tradition that Santa Cruz has had for years of treating homeless people like unwanted insects in the area. So Steve Schnarr's article and letter to Police Chief Mills continues, mentioning the case of Richard Hardy, who was dropped face down on the sidewalk by Officer Vasquez in 2013 in the wee hours of the morning on Pacific Avenue, something which would have hardly excited anybody's notice. He was, I think he was drunk at the time, or he was sitting on a bench with a friend at about 1 or 2 in the morning or around midnight, which Brent Adams, who is also a video journalist as well as being a social service activist, and a former Occupy activist who has suffered years of persecution and continues to be persecuted for his involvement with the Occupy movement and his presence in the 75 River Street vacant bank building in 2011, which was used as the pretext for dispersing the Occupy movement and intimidating a generation of activists over the last decade. Brent Adams videoed the Richard Hardy slam down or drop down or it slipped out of my hands. And it actually got printed in the Sentinel. It got video linked so that people could read it and see it online. And inquiries were made by Schnarr, by myself, I think even by Brent Adams, although I'm not quite sure about that last. And what the hell is going on with this Richard Hardy case in Vasquez? And we never got a response of any meaningful kind. And so Schnarr raises the issue again. What's the story with the Hardy case? What's the specific kind of punishment that was meted out, if anything, or changes that were made in police procedures to guarantee that this didn't happen again, and also to hold accountable Officer Vasquez for injuring this individual? And Schnarr notes that the homeless man was handcuffed. He was dropped face first into a curb, opening a gash in his face. I interviewed him several times. If you go back to my interviews in 2013 in the spring, you'll probably find it in the Huff archives. That's Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. HuffSantaCruz.org has literally hundreds of these old shows, many of them actually described. And indeed, if you go to the Huff website, look up descriptions of old shows, you'll find that on Sunday, April 25th, 2013, We have a discussion of Brent Adams' video on Officer Vasquez's brutal treatment of Hardy, and I believe that video is still available online. I'm checking now to see if it is. Let's see, the link is to a Sentinel story, and it's titled Homeless Man Injured During Arrest. Witness records video, and it looks like the video may have been removed by the Sentinel, but the story is still there, and I think the video does survive somewhere. There's also a second radio show which discusses Hardy. It's in March of 2013, and it's looking for it. And actually, it's June 23rd, 2013, at the end of the program. And there's probably more discussions of it. It's an issue that keeps coming up because the police never adequately addressed it, and it's one of the few well-documented examples, other than earlier examples, such as the shooting dead of homeless or often homeless man Happy John Dine in the fall of 1997 by Officer Connor Carey. And, of course, the more recent killing of Sean Arlt, which happened last year. And, indeed, Schnarr mentions the Arlt case and asks for policies that help officers in these difficult and chaotic situations to have more options when they're confronted with a man with a rake. As the police were, was it Officer Barry who did this shooting? I don't recall the moment, but it was an officer, and we never got to hear to see the police reports. I requested them again from Chief Mills, and so far I haven't heard anything back from him. I think actually his comment was, "We can't do that. I think it's a matter of discretion, but certainly there's a way to do it one way or another, or to certainly give out more information than was given out, rather than simply circle the wagons of the police department as Chief Vogel did and as the SCPD has done through time immemorial." Anyway, the third thing that Schnarr does not ask, however, that the officer who killed Arlt be held accountable in the sense of some kind of grand jury investigation, some kind of charge by the district attorney's office, where at least, you know, he has to defend himself and show that he was not guilty. None of that was brought forth. And Schnarr didn't ask for that. That would be something that I think really is really sort of key, and I'm sorry that Steve didn't ask for that. But he did ask for better policies of training the police. This is a sort of, it's a frequent request or even demand, or it often goes along with civil lawsuits against police who have killed individuals in apparently either wanton or unjustified ways, to say, well, you know, better training next time. But, of course, the people who did the killing aren't held accountable. And they just go about their merry way, not even getting any significant discipline from the police force. But the city pays out, you know, hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of dollars, because of the lawsuits, which they don't want to go to jury, because a jury would say, hey, this cop killed someone. And they damaged and hurt someone, and you know, they killed a father, they killed a son, and they didn't have to do it. They did so in a fashion that requires compensation. But, of course, we don't have a district attorney's office that will prosecute them. And we don't have individual activists like Schnarr calling for prosecutions in these cases. I was. At least I was calling for the full revelation of all the video, all the police reports on this issue, so the public could see what really happened, and so could the district attorney authorities, although the district attorney's office claimed that they had seen everything they needed to see and all was well. And they actually let me into the press conference where they announced that they had researched the Arlt killing last year. Another thing that Schnarr asks about is racism, racial profiling, and in order to document this or raise it specifically, he mentions that Tony Madrigal was the only person of color serving on the city council. He was a Latino coconut, if you will. That is someone who is sort of like an Uncle Tom to the Latino community, in my view, who didn't really raise issues of real police abuse, which could have been raised. He was at first on the police review board, and then he became a member of the city council. However, even his merely mentioning he saw some people being racially profiled at a Halloween event resulted in massive attacks on him by the city council, by the police department, by right-wing elements in the community, and that shut him up pretty quick. And Schnarr mentions this. He doesn't mention the fact that our own research, Huff's research, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom's research of the kinds of ticketing done on Pacific Avenue show that an officer, Barnett, had a particular tendency to ticket African-American guys. I think it was mostly men. And that that eventually showed up, though not in the records of the police department as they were putting them out in summary form. You had to go to the actual individual citations to find out that information, which we did, and we posted it online. Steve Schnarr seems to take a kind of a really strong distance away from the documentation that we unearthed. Really too bad. He also ran for city council unsuccessfully. Too bad. I think he would have been somewhat better than the people who won, Sandy Brown and Chris Krohn, who also ran in the coalition with him, although they're all pretty weak-kneed on these issues, and the very structure that they are a part of, I think, makes it really difficult or unlikely that they're going to speak about the real issues as truly as needs to be spoken about and take the action and lead the community in the actions that need to be taken. And so Schnarr's brooding in his letter about whether we can find a new era of policing in Santa Cruz where the police focus on public safety and don't stop smearing activists such as Vice Chief Clark smeared John Malkin, who was a founder of the Police Review Board 20 years ago and actually was hounded off the board by a combination of Clark's malevolence and board's indifference to Clark's malevolence. The police, supposedly the Civilian Police Review Board, was supposed to be the guardian of the people against the police department. And in fact, it was actually the police department's fox in the chicken coop to make sure that everything continued to run smoothly as then Chief of Police Steve Belcher, that's what he was called, wanted it. Anyway, Schnarr has this letter. I responded by posting a flyer which asked for a number of specific things. And strangely enough, Andy Mills responded to my letter, which I found surprising. I don't want to say encouraging, although I probably was encouraged by it, probably falsely so, but that remains to be seen. I'm going to read you some of Mills' responses, and you can catch more of them if you go online to the story that I wrote online, or you can also sign up for the Huff newsletter, which I give out and send out regularly. This specific story is demands of the new police chief and his initial response. And what I'll give you an example of a couple of the demands and Chief Mills' responses. He wrote back to both of us, Chief Mills did, but he didn't respond to anything Steve really said. He just responded to my flyer. I'm not quite, maybe he responded to Steve privately. Steve has not responded to my request that Steve give me his own sense of whether the concerns I expressed in my flyer, which I'm going to read some of, were shared by him. And I had the impression they might be, but I also have the impression, as I said, that he's very nervous about associating himself with me. I could be wrong about this. Maybe I'm a little paranoid. Who knows? But I still haven't heard from him. It's been about a week or more. And I don't know. But in any case, here's what Mills wrote back to me, "Dear Robert and Steve," he actually addressed it to us both, this was on December 27th, a few days ago, "I'm choosing to respond to this email because I genuinely believe the questions are from one seeking truth. You may disagree with some of my responses, but for the sake of brevity and yet transparency, I'll do my best. I think it's worthy of note that to change things and improve fairness and justice, people must work together for a common purpose. This is the primary purpose of the MLK March, Martin Luther King March, learning to work together during an undoubtedly fractured time in our nation. I welcome you to join us. This does not negate the multitudes of injustice, but builds a bridge we can all walk over together." And then I responded. He went through the different concerns I expressed in my flyer with his own response. My concern: open the books on the use of tasers, batons, guns, pepper spray, chokeholds, and pain compliance. Mills: we do this already. I will further report out uses of force to the Chief's Advisory Committee. Of course, that's not to the public. I'm not aware that he does this already. I've made requests for specifics about this. I've gotten only the vaguest statements, like the number of times that tasers were used, not when they were used, against whom they were used, whether injuries were created, what the charge was, who the officer was who used it. None of these things were made a part of the record. They are in the police records. There's no reason why they shouldn't be made available. Even the court decision, the Copley decision, that essentially cripples citizen police review boards by keeping confidential investigations of police officers, does not forbid the police department from revealing reports on all the use of when was a gun displayed, when was pepper spray used, when were chokeholds done. So we'll see if Andy Mills is willing to release this information. I'm not even putting it in as a formal Public Records Act request at the moment, in order to sort of calm the waters and, you know, talk in a mellow tone of voice. To do so, however, without being hypocritical is difficult because I don't feel mellow about it, really. I feel like I'm dealing with a PR guy. But I have to say that I felt that way this summer when I spoke to him at the as Freedom Sleepers was being crushed under outgoing Chief Vogel and ongoing Mayor Cynthia Matthews and City Manager Martine Bernal. The Freedom Sleepers, of course, were the people nearest City Hall who were trying to raise the issue of the sleeping ban. Mills claimed to me in an interview, gave me a long interview, which I played on free radio, that he wanted to see the end of tickets for sleeping at night and that he was going to do what he could do about this. And I thought, you know, specifically what? And he didn't want to go any further at that time. And I thought, oh boy, here we go again, just more blather. But as you can see through his behavior in the last 6 months, where he has taken unilaterally the decision independently, and I think previously to Martine Bernal, although who knows who made the decision first. Bernal controls his job, unless, of course, one has to look closely at his contract, which I actually got a copy of, but I haven't really closely looked at previous to this show, at least. In any case, it certainly wasn't Bernal who began talking about this first. It was Mills. And Mills also has essentially persuaded Garcia, or worked with Garcia, head of Parks and Rec, to allow a limited number of homeless people to camp in San Lorenzo Park. And I don't need to keep saying this over and over again, but it must be acknowledged, it must be respected, it must be praised. It's obviously a saner approach than driving people all over town. As I said, I think the motivation isn't so much to actually address this in a realistic, ongoing way, but to temporarily deal with it and to appear humanistic as you do, and to get people out of the downtown and get people out of the residential neighborhoods. It's also maybe a way of preserving some money in the police budget. And, you know, who knows? It may also be a way of altering the dialogue on the whole issue, and that would be fine. In any case, I asked him again. One of the aspects of my flyer was cut back a bloated police budget for the largest department in the state for a city of 60,000. That was a figure given to me by activist Becky Johnson some years ago. It does, the police department does take a large percentage of the budget. And certainly in the last 5 years, there's been a major focus on harassment of the homeless. It has nothing to do with real crime. Sleeping at night, sorry all you Take Back Santa Cruz people, it's not a real crime. And I know that Take Back Santa Cruz folks, and Alicia Cube specifically, will claim, oh, we don't want the police necessarily arresting people for sleeping. We want them to get the criminals, the drug dealers, the sexual offenders, the panhandlers, all the evil people, just the evil guys. But unfortunately, the legislation they support and the people on city council that they've elected have pushed for legislation that mostly impacts the entire homeless population and makes it criminal to sleep at night, to be in a park at night, to hold up a sign on a median asking for spare change, to sit down next to a building. It's criminalization of the poor in the visible places, the theory being if you make it hard enough for them, they will all disappear. Sort of the supposed Rudolph Giuliani approach that was done in New York, so heralded by our Führer, Don Trump. Mills' response to my suggesting they cut back a bloated police budget was, you know this to be a fact? Even if it were true, would the university, center of commerce, and county seat, not to mention a large tourist center, demand incredible resources? A recent outside consulting firm stated the department must either increase staffing or reduce demand. The reality is the community must decide on what level of service they want for the price they must pay in terms of tax burden. I welcome that input. The real question, though, is what has been the major activity of the police department? If it's been running homeless people around, arresting them, ticketing them, or going after the drug war, then it's, to me, a bloated, well, spending money on it is a bloated police budget. But if you look at the amount of money the police and the parks and rec departments gets, and this is for largely policing, you're talking about more than half the city budget, or at least half the city budget. That doesn't leave much left over. Another question I asked, or another demand I made on this flyer, and it was really to the community and not to him. I didn't expect Mills to do anything about it. He's the head of the police department. You know, he runs the cops. I don't expect him to suddenly turn into a wild-eyed radical. It's unrealistic. He's not about to. But, you know, strange things happen. I'm not going to say nay to that. So I'm looking at his responses. I said, demilitarize and refocus the SCPD from its flash mob, shock and awe, overkill tactics. Mills said, I know what is generally meant by military tactics, but not sure what you mean by flash mob or shock and awe. I do believe generally in the reduction of military tactics and equipment when possible. There are some dangerous people who present challenging situations. These incidents take special care and concern with equipment and tactics designed to allow everyone to walk away safe. We are currently giving advanced de-escalation training to all our staff. This is above and all CIT, not sure what that means, and mental health training. Is he going to send the Bearcat back where it came from? Is he going to announce he's not going to accept military grants from the government of their excess military equipment? Is he going to withdraw from fusion center activity? I'm not sure about any of that. He's not talking about any of that. Again, this is an initial response, so who knows what comes next. But of course, what I did next, and this is a long list of items, and I suggest you go to my website. I'll read a few more, but I'm not going to read all of them. Refuse drug war money, military equipment, drone, face and license surveillance technology. Mills said, we do use asset seizure money, so they're not going to refuse it. It is lawful byproduct of criminal activity. Marijuana growth. Thank you very much, Andy. I don't think so. I mean, it may be lawful, but it ain't right. We do not use it, however, for this kind of equipment. No, but if you're using that kind of equipment, it's just as bad. It violates your supposed interest in reducing military tactics and equipment. I have given money to nonprofits in the past to help kids avoid crime, grow educationally. We will do so again in the future. There are strict limitations on what the money can be used for. He's not saying whether he's going to reject face or license surveillance technology or the use of drones or the use of the Bearcat. Or he is saying he's going to keep getting drug war money, you know, from confiscating property with civil forfeitures. That means you don't have to be even charged with a crime or convicted of a crime. You just have to, I think you have to be charged with a crime. And then you have to prove you're not guilty by a preponderance of the evidence. It's a very slimy way of raising money for the feds and for local police departments. Also, if he is so concerned about kids to avoid crime, he might want to reinstitute giving bikes back to the bike church to pass on to nonprofits, as they were doing for years before Mayor Hillary Bryant and her buddies in power, followed by Pamela Comstock and Cynthia Matthews, David Chirazes, and not really objected to by Don Lane or the great liberals on the council. And there wasn't a lot of opposition, certainly not outside city council, by former city council member Micah Posner. We don't have those bikes being given to the bike church anymore. Well, he could try to resume that program, but I haven't heard anything about that yet. Maybe he will. But he hasn't so far. Require all SCPD officers to live in the city, I suggested, not the local districts they police. And Mills said, I would love to encourage this. It is not legally or practically possible, especially in a city where the cost of living is far beyond what we pay our officers. I would love to work toward corporate housing for new officers to get them to live in the city. Maybe you can help us find a way to do this. I don't know how independent activists with no budget are going to have much help in doing this. He could start making specific requests of city council that they apportion money for police officers to live in the districts that they live in or that they work from, or suggesting that a certain amount of their salary be mandated for that. And, you know, that they essentially have to spend it on housing in the area that they are policing or patrolling. Anyway, one more. End abuse, citations, stayaways, and arrests of poor and homeless people for status crimes. Mills replies, I think my record on this speaks for itself, and I have paid a political price for taking this stand. He's talking about the San Lorenzo Park area and suspending the sleeping ban at night, generally, at least in some cases, or in cases where there's no, I describe it as health or safety problem. Those who are homeless need to help me too. Those who are stealing and creating disturbances, and clearly not all are, have got to stop. We are also desperately trying to get the county with its $282 million budget to get the resources to those who need it most. The city has not legislative or budgetary mandate to approach this difficult problem, yet it has been the manager's highest priority if you base it on time of commitment. They talked about, you know, getting the county involved. That's the latest spiel from city council members like Rochelle Naroyan and, I don't know, former mayor Cynthia Chase. If only the county would help us, we would resolve all these problems. Yeah, but it's the city that makes all these laws crimes, citations, stayaways, and arrests. And his notion that this is the fault of the poor people themselves who sat down next to a building or who moved outside the little boxes that they were allowed to play their guitars in or who woke up at night next to the Loudoun Nelson Center and Parks and Rec then seized all their property and gave them a $300 citation, and that happened too within the last 2 weeks. Sorry, that's the case, at least according to the report of Michael Orr, also known as Dreamcatcher. It isn't, I'm not getting really meaningful responses from Mills on these issues so far. Again, the fact that I'm getting any responses is new, but, you know, we're in an era of maybe new policing. I mean, California is not happy with Trump's election. And Santa Cruz is not happy with Trump's election. And so insofar as I call, of course, the whole behavior of the majority on Santa Cruz City Council Trumpism. But there could conceivably be a reaction against Trumpism locally. There's some talk of rent control organizing going on, though not at the city council level for sure. That was promised by Councilmember Crone, and a lot of blather from Mayor Cynthia Chase and Vice Mayor David Chirazes about housing, let's look into housing. And they spent many, many hours talking about housing. They certainly talked about it. Five different evening city council sessions involved there. But no rent freeze, no rent control, no study of rent control, nothing in any meaningful way. And the activists back down thinking, I think, that they have to either talk more with city council members behind the scenes, or maybe, and this is more likely and more realistic, organize more because they need the power. But they did have power in October when they went to city council with 100 people, and the city council was forced to at least let Ernestine Soldara, do I have her name right? I'm not sure, speak at city council when they tried to shut her down. Or actually, it's a variety of speakers. And that kind of demand, that kind of citizens refusing to accept the censorship that's masquerades as legality under these circumstances, was encouraging to me, but they accepted Christopher Crone's, I'll bring it up at the next meeting, and he lied, or he changed his mind, depending on how you want to view it, or what happened, I don't know. Anyway, this letter goes on at length. If you want to read the rest of my demands, the demands that Huff members made actually of the previous police department, and some of them updated to, because he now heads the police department, you can go to the Santa Cruz Indy Media. I also sent it out as a Huff email or the Huff website. It should be there as well, huffsantacruz.org. Check it out. And let's take a musical break, and I'll be back with some more.
If you want the bomb, one of your very ownium, not the ordinary kind, but one made of plutonium, you got to have a place, a kind of power station. It's the only place plutonium's made. If you want the bomb, build a station that is nuclear. Johnny Doe will foot the bill. The cost is quite spectacular. When atoms work for peace, electricity bills increase. But it's the only way plutonium's made. If you want the bomb, turn your lights on with uranium. How to explain away the cost is straining many a cranium. Shut down the plants that toil on gas and coal and oil. Then you'll have to get plutonium made. If you want the bomb, say goodbye to civil liberties. Atoms ain't compatible with freedom and democracy. And unions and the like are apt to go on strike just when you want to get plutonium made. If you want the bomb, don't expect to have the niceties, hospitals and schools and things in people's paradise cities. Kick Britain up the ass, put the miners out to grass, but at least you get plutonium made. On the other hand, if we really get the bomb, we won't need no amenities. NHS for corpses is somewhat of an obscenity. So they may be right, cutting everything in sight, except the way plutonium's made.
And that's Peggy Seeger singing from Ewan McCall, with Ewan McCall. Actually, she's on the album with Ewan, but not in that song, called If You Want the Bomb. And the Items of News is the name of the album that she's singing from. We'll be hearing some more from that particular album. It's an old one from the 80s, maybe even the early, late 70s. But she's plucky, she's sharp in her satire, and I like her. So I'm going to play more of her. So a few days ago, I spoke with Mike Boyd, who's an activist who sued the city and county for taxing medical marijuana. And he and I had a conversation that was somewhat chopped up on the phone. He talked about, I was kind of interested in his sense of what the impact of recreational marijuana regulations at the state level, the legalizing, it's going to happen in a few days for at least some dispensaries, although it's highly limited everywhere. And even in Santa Cruz, you know, liberal, wonderful, marijuana-friendly Santa Cruz, where it's still going to be a crime to smoke a joint on the streets. It's going to be a crime to try to, I don't know, order a marijuana drink in a restaurant or any bar or any other place, smoke a joint in a place where you can smoke a cigarette, but you can't smoke a joint. All this based on the paranoia around marijuana that has become, it's been so entrenched as a way of funding police departments and kind of the background noise for some fundamentalist religious groups and conservative groups that they don't want to get rid of it. They don't want to let it escape. It's too much a part of the background for them. And this is my sense of why this is happening. Anyway, Boyd talked about filing a lawsuit against the 10% county tax and the 8.75% use tax for dispensaries. He fought in federal court for 18 months, he said, to get it back to state court. And the federal judge did rule that he had the standing to sue because he had receipts that proved he'd paid the tax. Shouldn't have had to pay the tax for medicine. Medicines is generally not taxed, as I understand it. And there was an amendment put on the ballot in the last election to try to cover over the problems that the city got by, and the city and the county got when they passed the marijuana taxes. He's again having a hearing coming up in February in Superior Court. And I asked him about whether he got any support from WAM or the dispensaries or independent activists for his work. And he said, no, they're not interested. They have their own special deals, and he also is concerned about there being essentially what he calls a marijuana cartel in the county with sort of fingers in the county government representing dispensaries and lawsuits. He mentioned the Rice cartel, referring to Ben Rice and certain other members of the Rice family, involving the county, some board of supervisors, the county administrator. If you're a part of this group, you get some privileged treatment from county authorities. If you're not, you don't. I can't comment on the accuracy of Boyd's allegations. I've had mixed dealings with Ben Rice, and that may color my reaction to him. I want to be fair to him. It's really important to be accurate in this. And so I did pass on to Ben Rice when I spoke with Boyd last time on the air, and Rice did not reply as to whether to any of the allegations Boyd made, which I frankly don't have the specifics for at this moment. I see an ad for Brent Adams Warming Center has come in, but I haven't heard that it's been open at all this year, except maybe a day or two in the rain. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if that happened. It hasn't been, it's been very cold up where I'm staying in Felton, but not, I guess, 34 degrees or something, whatever is required for the warming center to open down here. Anyway, I'm going to play a little of the interview I had with Mike Boyd. Some of it got mangled, and I've kind of summarized that part of it. Some of it did not, and that's the part you're going to hear. County, what would you estimate? And also, do they have any kind of organizational advocacy groups that you know of, or are you connected with them in any way?
No, I don't know of any patients' advocacy groups. All I know about is the commercial establishments have a good lobbyist, which is typically the case where you have money. The people with the money, they can buy the influence. The people without money have very little influence.
So, again, I've been having equipment problems, but I think we've been catching at least some of what you've been saying. Sometime earlier in this conversation, you spoke about sort of the early history of your lawsuit, where in essence your intention was to stop them from taxing medical marijuana because it's medicine. How successful has this effort been in other jurisdictions? Because we know now that medical marijuana is what, in 23 or so states, has been legalized to some extent. Now, of course, recreational marijuana in 7 states. Has there been any pushback by advocacy groups that you know of in other states to do something similar to what you're doing, or to make sure that what you're doing isn't necessary?
In fact, the ballot measure that made recreational marijuana legal has specific language that exempts medical marijuana from taxation.
Here in California.
And here in California. I got it right here. It's section 34011G. The sales and use tax imposed in part one of this division shall not apply to the retail sales of medical cannabis concentrates, edible medical cannabis products, or topical cannabis, as those terms are defined in Chapter 3.5, Division 8 of the Business and Professional Code, when a qualified patient or primary caregiver for a qualified patient provides his or her card issued under Section 11362.71.
Hold it. I believe you.
What that translated that into English, if you got a medical marijuana card, and you go into these recreational dispensaries, I should get a tax exemption under that law.
Now, is this change the city and county tax?
Yeah, it does. In fact, I found another thing about that where it says that law is repealed. Let's see, where does it say here?
No, I believe you, and I'd like to know that if anyone asks me, I'll again refer them to you for specifics. But
the new law repealed those because basically they're trying to regulate marijuana, and the state law takes precedence.
Well, it sounds like
the only way that those laws would be able to survive is if they got in the county, for example. The county law would survive if more people voted yes on the law, their law, than voted yes in a statewide measure in the county.
And that might well have been the case. I haven't checked the votes. But you know,
for the court to figure out. So that's basically what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to the judge in February. I'm going to say, look, the law changed. Here's what the law says. And now it's got like these provisions in there about cartels and monopolies.
Mike, let me ask you, Mike, a person going, a medical marijuana patient going to buy marijuana, let's suppose he, you know, would cost him now, I don't know, $50 for whatever. At the present time, what's the change beginning? I guess it didn't just begin. You know, I mean, Proposition 64 passed a year ago, so it's law, and the fact that recreational marijuana can only be distributed sold starting the first here. Still, medical marijuana was impacted immediately. Was there an immediate drop in price in the city and county, and did they stop charging the tax as a consequence of this change in the state law?
No, they didn't change anything.
And is that a part of your lawsuit now?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be a part of my lawsuit now because I get to go back and refile my suit.
And again, when you approach WAM, which has Ben Rice as an attorney often, and an advocate at City Council, I take it they're not too sympathetic to your attempt to lessen the burden for medical marijuana patients.
Well, let's say that when I talk to the WAM, what's your name?
Valerie Correll.
Valerie Correll. I was at a meeting, and she basically came up to me, and she told me that I should be more conciliatory and peaceful towards these county people. They're not the enemy. And I basically don't agree.
What was the impact of Proposition 64 on medical marijuana, other than what we've already mentioned, in terms of, let's say, the ability of doctors to recommend it? Because you're saying now you require a county, or I should say a state card, to even get any of these tax benefits, if they're going to be given at all. And apparently...
No. My read is the same as it is currently. You just need a qualified doctor to issue the card.
We mean a recommendation.
A recommendation. Oh, I got a card. Yeah, they give you a card in a little form. De facto, it's the same thing.
Well, I found that, you know, I mean, I could get a recommendation, but there was another step. I had to go, you know, to a state or actually a county agency to get a card.
Well, they had that set up with SB 420, but that was repealed by court action. The court found that was unconstitutional.
When was that, you know?
2015 was an appeals court case that found that.
So right now it is adequate simply to have a note from your doctor that says, I find this patient has advised me that medical marijuana helps her or his condition.
That's correct. It doesn't repeal Prop 215. In fact, the Prop 64 has specific language that it doesn't repeal Prop 215 or supersede it. It just adds to it.
And we should say that 215 is the 1996 proposition that really kind of established a sort of Bill of Rights of a sort for medical marijuana patients, and it's currently the broadest statement of accessibility for medical marijuana of any of the propositions, any of the states, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, it is. And the key is it's called Compassionate Use Act. It doesn't have the word tax in it. It doesn't have the word business in it. It has the word compassionate in it. That's what it's about, compassion, not money.
Has any part of, because this is one of the concerns of those opposing Proposition 64, of which I was one, and I think you were another, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Was the fear that 64 would lead to state authorities to, in fact, essentially override Proposition 215. Has that in any case, in any way, happened at the state level or in terms of local or city and county action? What's your sense of that?
I would say it's too soon to tell.
So in the last year, you haven't noticed any deletery, any difficult or, you know, bad impact on, let's say, the ability of doctors to make recommendations for medical marijuana?
No, I haven't seen anything like that.
Well, that's reassuring, because I know that was one of the concerns that some of us had. Did you have that concern previously?
Oh, yes, very much so.
And why do you think that concern turned out not to be something that we really had to be concerned about?
I think it's because they made some minor language changes at the last minute to protect Prop 215.
Because I know when we were talking about this, it was in the fall of 2016, and at that point, I think the language was locked in, so I'm kind of, I'm a bit confused about it.
Yeah, I think I was at the same event, and it actually wasn't locked in yet. It was soon to be locked in, and I think that the reaction that the sponsors got that forum of people being so upset about that had an effect.
Do you remember what month that was?
July.
The forum I went to was in like October. It was activists who were kind of belatedly organizing against.
This was July time frame is what I remember.
I gotcha. So we're talking with Mike Boyd and hopefully catching some of what he says. I think we're catching what you're saying now. We missed some of the earlier discussion. You say your next court hearing is coming up in February.
Yes, sir.
And that's going to be what, in the local Superior Court of, the judge?
That's correct.
Do you know who's hearing it, or do we know who's hearing it yet?
I don't know yet.
I got you.
I assume it would be Burdick yet.
What kind of an outcome do you anticipate, if anything?
Well, the courts, like the county and the city, are reluctant to, let us say, be helpful to pro se litigants like myself, people that don't have lawyers. I'm not a member of the lawyer club. I'm not in the bar. So they like to protect their turf, let's say. But judges are lawyers.
I think all judges are lawyers.
They're not lawyers.
Have you ever been successful in any of these legal challenges? Or this isn't your first legal challenge, or is it?
No. I won a remand from the Court of Appeals against the Soquel Creek Water District in a lawsuit I brought over their tiered rate making.
And what was the, in layman's language, what was the effect of that lawsuit success?
Well, right now it's all tied up in a state Supreme Court, but if I prevail, it means that the rates that the water district approved back from 2013 to today are illegal, and they'll likely have to rebate money to the ratepayers because of it.
How much money, in terms of, let's say, per person?
Oh, well, we got 1,400 ratepayers, maybe $1,000 each.
And are you getting any support from any of the local organizations for this work?
Well, I have a lawyer who's interested in pursuing it. And then there's a couple of individuals in the community that are definitely supporting it, want to join me, depending on what happens with the state Supreme Court on that one.
But Ben Rice hasn't signed on?
No, it's not Ben Rice. You forgot. I asked Ben Rice to be my lawyer once, and he declined.
Well, he's a pretty high-priced individual, I understand, although he does have some pro bono stuff, I guess, for some particular causes, never for any local homeless causes that I remember at the moment, although he was active in supporting homeless civil rights actions 20 years ago. And so, either people change or who knows, maybe we get some of us continue to be regarded as disreputable. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying the guy's disreputable or he's a bad lawyer.
No, I'd say they regard us as disreputable.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're entitled to their opinion.
Sure. Well, so, Mike, anything else we should know about your thoughts about, current commercial marijuana sales? There's been a concern that, the claim that the Proposition 64 would protect small businesses and small cultivators is actually hogwash because they're grabbing licenses like pancakes or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything really about that because, I'm not a cultivator. I've been dependent on purchasing my my medicine for a long time. So I don't even have enough. I don't think I'd have enough space to even grow anything.
I got it. If people want more information about what you're doing, do you post your stuff online? Do you print it in hard copy? What's the story?
No, I'm happy to send people stuff and answer their questions. Best way to get a hold of me is at my email. That's boyd.michaele@gmail.com.
boyd.michaele@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave there unless you've got something you want to add.
No, that's it. Thanks for checking in.
Well, thank you, and thanks for your patience with my difficult recording equipment.
No problem.
Take care, man. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
And, of course, one of the primary interests Huff has had, or I at least have had, and some of us in Huff as well, is the accessibility of marijuana for folks who are low income or homeless. There's been care packages that some distribution centers and some collectives have made available. But generally, the promise of some kind of easy and simple access to medical marijuana has not been provided for by, at least by government agencies, nor really by private agencies, as far as I can see. At least I've not been able to get information that essentially justifies that. But here's a little music, and then I'll be back with more.
50 or 60 coal miners and their families. So that when the strike came, I naturally threw in my any talents that I possessed put them on at the disposal of the miners.
It was in the year of 84, shit really hit the fan, when Mac the Knife, McGregor, Maggie Thatcher's hatchet man, said we'll have to close another 20 pits to meet the plan, and dump another 30,000 miners.
Daddy, were you with the first or the first? Did you tell the NCB to do its worst? Or did you save your lily liver, sell the union down the river, a scab, a blacklead, one forever cursed?
When Arthur Scargill heard the news, he cried, this Yankee slob is a gift from Cowboy Reagan and is here to steal our jobs. Do an axe job on the union for the crummy Thatcher mob, but we'll show him what it means to be a miner.
Daddy, Daddy, did you man the picket line? Did you fight and save the future of the mines? Or did you take the wrong direction? Did you squeal for police protection? Did you let them see your India rubber spine?
When the Yorkshire lads came out on strike, they cried, it's evident. The only way to stop McGregor and the government is to bring the lads out everywhere from Scotland down to Kent, and we'll show them what it means to be a miner.
Daddy, did you march out the head? Did you stand there on the picket line unfed? Or did you sell your mates to have a fortnight on the Costa Brava? Did you choose a two-week holiday instead?
Is joined at last, the forces they amassed on their side, the press, the telly, all the weapons of their class, plus McGregor and his blacklegs, but we'll never let them pass.
The NUM's the weapon of the miners. Daddy, what did you do in the strike? Did you scab and let your workmates wage the fight? How the neighbors stood and booed us, said we had the stink of Judas. Daddy, what did you do in the strike?
And that was Daddy, What Did You Do in the Strike by Ewan McCall, about the miners' strike up in England in 1984. Wow, a long time ago. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is the Sunday edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And I've been noticing all the sort of anti-marijuana propaganda in the papers. Oh, terror-filled tales about drivers' accidents and the dangers of driving while stoned and so forth, and the high rise in the alleged risks of commercial marijuana sales as far as accidents on the road goes. And, of course, that recalls a story I read recently, which, unfortunately, I have not yet unearthed from these archives, which mentions that in Colorado and Washington states where recreational marijuana has been legal for a couple years, there's been actually a decrease in traffic accidents. And decrease in the sales of alcohol and alcohol-related accidents. So that's It was interesting to find that story, and it seemed to contradict a lot of the concerns, which I think, again, are being prompted by the desire to retain the mythology of reefer madness. That really is an important sort of pillar of, or pillar of salt it may be, but pillar it is of the kind of reactionary perspective on marijuana that, as I said before, funds police departments, district attorneys, attorneys generally, and hurts a lot of people. Oh, the jail industry, the prison industry. Here's a story in from Wichita, Kansas, the AP, which was in the Mercury News. Police and the FBI are investigating whether an argument over an online game prompted a hoax call that led to a house where an officer shot and killed a Kansas man who apparently wasn't involved in the dispute. Chief Troy Livingston on Friday blamed a prankster who called 911 and made up a story about a shooting and kidnapping. He did not mention reports that an argument over online gambling was at the heart of the prank, although he said investigators have made a good progress tracking online leads. Police have not disclosed the name of the man who was killed Thursday, but relatives identified him as Andrew Finch, 28. And it looks like the name, the paper was, I think it was last Thursday's paper, which would have been December 28th. Livingston, that's the police chief, speaking at a news conference, said the hoax call was a case of swatting, in which a person makes up a false report to get a SWAT team to descend on an address. Due to the actions of a prankster, we have an innocent victim, Livingston said. Actually, it's due to the actions of his police department that they have an innocent victim. But, of course, that isn't the headline of the story. He said no one had been arrested in connection with the hoax, yeah, least of all the cop who killed the guy. Police played the audio of the call to 911. The man said his father had been shot in the head. He said he was holding his mother and a sibling at gunpoint. The caller, speaking with relative calm, said he poured gasoline inside the home and I might just set it on fire. Several officers arrived and surrounded the home and braced for a hostage situation. When Finch went to the door, police told him to put his hands up and move slowly, but Livingston said the man moved a hand toward the area of his waistband, a common place where guns are concealed, or at least where the police say guns are concealed. An officer, I don't think most people do conceal guns near their waistband when they answer the door of their house. It just is a nice, convenient excuse for police to shoot someone dead who's there or to explain to their family and to the media why they did this rather than adopt a more cautious alternative. But Livingston, again, said the man moved a hand toward the area of his waistband, a common place where guns are concealed. An officer, fearing the man was reaching for a gun, fired a single shot. Finch died a few minutes later at a hospital. Livingston said Finch was unarmed. The Finch family on Friday allowed reporters inside their home. What gives the cops the right to open fire? Lisa Finch asked. That cop murdered my son over a false report in the first place. Lisa Finch said the family was forced outside barefoot in freezing snow and handcuffed after the shooting. She said her granddaughter was forced to step over her dying uncle and that no guns were found in the house. Dexetro, an online news service focused on gaming, reported that the series of events began with an online argument over a $1 or $2 wager in a Call of Duty game on UMG Gambling, which operates online tournaments, including one involving Call of Duty. We woke this morning to horrible news about an innocent man losing his life, UMG spokeswoman Shannon Gerritsen said in an email to the Associated Press. Our hearts go out to his loved ones. We are doing everything we can to assist the authorities in this matter. She declined to disclose other details. In addition to the 911 call, police also released a brief video of body camera footage from another officer at the scene. It was difficult to see what happened clearly. The FBI estimates that roughly 400 cases of swatting, falsely calling SWAT, occur annually, with some using caller ID spoofing to disguise their number. An FBI supervisor in Kansas City, Missouri, which covers all of Kansas, said the agency joined in the investigation at the request of local police. In other cases of apparent swatting, three families in Florida in January had to evacuate their homes after a detective received an anonymous email claiming bombs had been placed there. Representative Catherine Clark, a Massachusetts Democrat, introduced an anti-swatting bill in 2015, then was herself the victim of swatting. Armed officers in 2016 responded to an anonymous call claiming an active shooter was at Clark's home. Notice, however, all this diversion onto the issue of swatting, rather than the record and the identity of the police officer who killed Andrew Finch, the innocent man who answered the door. His history. Did he have a history of this kind of violence, of this kind of shooting from the hip? The whole focus has changed, and the headline is even "Police Hoax Leads to Death of Unarmed Man, Swatting Call to 911 Results in Shooting of Innocent Victim." No. The judgment of the officer and his shoot-first approach resulted in that. That's how it appears to me, anyway. So, let's listen now to some voices from the Christmas Meal, which was held this year at the Museum of Art and History, as I guess it was last year. You'll hear my impressions of the meal, some interviews, and stuff like that. Okay, well, it's Christmas Day. I ran into a man who was looking for the homeless meal, or the Christmas meal, I say, because it serves everybody. It's around 12:15, and I'm holding him back from eating to get his thoughts on, I don't know, what I want, what's your thoughts on? Are you indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
How's it going outdoors?
Good, all right.
Hassles from police or anything of that sort?
No, no.
And that's because you are a slippery character?
Not really. I'm not a slippery character. I just use a little common courtesy. And you know what? I'm 63 years old, and I seem to pray a lot more than I did 20, 30 years ago.
Does it work?
Yes, yes. I'm not a religious man, but I'm a spiritual man. And so I asked Sugmon, who I choose to call my God, I ask him for guidance every day.
And what part of the outdoors do you usually find yourselves in? The green areas, the urban areas, in terms of sleeping at night?
The green areas.
No hassles from rangers or anything?
No, no hassles from rangers.
Do they know you're there?
No. That's why there's no hassle.
Oh, so you may not be a slippery character, but you are a tactful character.
Exactly, and maybe that comes along with age.
What have you seen about folks outside in the last couple of years? Has there been any change in the situation for them?
Yes and no. I mean, there's been change. It depends on who you ask, you know? It depends on who you ask. I mean... There's been change, yeah.
What kind of change do you see?
The kind of change I see is Santa Cruz wants homeless people out of here. That's the change I see, and that's gotten kind of more apparent, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, for whatever reasons. People need to be educated, not kicked to the corner, and we're all human. We're all human, so we should be treated like a human, whether what our finances are big or whether they're small. And it's a shame.
Have a good day.
Merry Christmas.
There are other humans on the street. Don't forget it.
And it's a shame that only on Christmas Day that we can smile and give to each other.
Those two didn't smile.
It's a shame that only on Christmas Day we can smile and say Merry Christmas and give. That I feel that we should do that all year long. That's why today I want to take advantage of people smiling, and I'm not a religious man, but I say Merry Christmas just to be congenial, you know, so I can get a smile out of people.
Or just hello. I mean, you know, that should work.
Yeah, hello is good, too. But I mean,
or, you know, fuck Trump or whatever.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I might say fuck them both. But some people are, you know, oh, it's Clinton, it's Bernie. As I told you before, I think they're both part of the same racket.
Yeah. Well, it's not a perfect world. If we're looking for perfection, well, we'll be disappointed every time.
Looking for honesty, you know, looking for, you know, real change, not people who are promising change but not giving it.
Integrity and honesty is a thing that's been thrown to the wayside.
You sound pretty honest as we're talking right now. It doesn't seem impossible.
No, it's not impossible. It's just that, you know, clarity is they want to keep us dumbing down. They want to keep us dumbing down. And as long as we're dumbing down, well, then we're confused. And, we, you know, they can herd us around like cattle or something, you know. If you keep people dumbing down from... I don't want to get into chemtrails and all that, but if you keep people dumbing down and keep them loaded on drugs and alcohol, well, then they're dumbing down.
Or consumer items that they buy every day, keeping up with the neighbors and so, or rents, trying to pay your rent if you're indoors.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to be rude, but I'm...
You're hungry, I'll bet.
Yeah.
You better get going.
All right, bro. Have a good day.
We've been talking with, if you want to say.
Eagle.
Thanks, Eagle.
All right.
The Museum of Art and History. Hey, any reports from the street?
No. But I can tell you this has gone as smoothly as it's ever been, and it's very under attended.
I don't see many people here.
Yeah, no, it was only a 100-foot line, and then they all went in 20 minutes, and...
Filet mignon, perhaps?
No, we're having ham today. We're having ham steak.
This is Eduardo.
And it all looks totally delicious.
Yes. He's got his little cap. He hasn't got his gun with him, though.
The guy's a little absent-minded on Christmas, I guess.
I'll try being nice.
So
that's good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's delicious. Anyone is welcome to come, and why they aren't, I don't know, you know. But that means everyone's taken care of somewhere else. That's good, too.
Or maybe not, and that's not so good.
They just don't know, yeah. Walking around town this morning, I was telling people about it, and some of them didn't know. So, but it's a beautiful place to have it, right out here in the mall.
Well, I don't like the way they've closed off this whole area with fencing. I think it's...
That's all the time.
Pisses me off.
Today.
Yeah, well, they did that, I think, a couple months ago. That's when they put up the fencing over there on Cathcart.
They've got those six restaurants in there to protect.
I don't mean Cathcart, I mean Cooper's.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be a sort of, you know, they didn't want people sleeping at night in that area, I would imagine.
Although you could just jump over the fence and do it.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You want to say what you've been talking to? You don't have to.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm undercover man.
He's on the steps and undercover.
And undercover. Oh, here he is.
Here comes a plate of food. For us? No.
This is Civil War.
Get all that.
Southern soldier.
That's a smart one.
Every man has the right to decide his own destiny.
A plate of food,
but his destiny must be beside. It must be good for the people.
Where's the turkey? I see ham. I see bread. I see veggie.
They even gave me the honor of carving the holiday roast beast.
Ah, right. Well... Dead pig, that's what I'm going to go get.
Ooh, come on. You went in and you went in early and served.
I know there was a
God had to convince Peter three times that it's okay to eat this stuff.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to go check out the meal. I'll talk to God, too, if I can find her. Yeah. Let's hear this story for free radio. Are you going to confess publicly on what happened to this pooch?
My animal had to be quarantined, and Robert offered to quarantine the animal up in Belton. After animal control had satisfied themselves that it was a good place for the animal to be quarantined and left, my dog and I left. My dog and I were not there at all during those 10 days.
Certainly not. They would never be there. But, I mean, what were the circumstances under which... First of all, let's introduce the dog. This dog's name is...
Barak.
Ah, yes, Barak, in honor of the former Führer of the country.
Barak is a Hebrew word that means lightning.
That guy was not certainly lightning-like. I don't know, more like sludge, I would say. So what happened that resulted in this Barak's being held?
In 2010, there was a disagreement between the people that had been having a drum circle in a certain parking lot in Santa Cruz, and they were being forced to leave so that the farmers market could be there, and there was a demonstration going on, and Robert was physically attacked because he was recording one of those people screaming things. And
was I screaming things?
Do what?
Was I screaming things?
No, the man that was screaming at you. And when he physically attacks you, your recorder went flying behind me, and the man went to shove me out of the way. Well, my dog was trained to protect me because I'm totally disabled, and he bit the man very badly in the arm that he hit me with. That's the circumstances why he had to be quarantined. Animal control determined that the dog or I were neither one at fault, that I had been attacked.
And the man survived the bite?
He's still in town. Yes, he survived. It was just on his arm. He had to have some stitches, but I seen the man a few days later, and he was actually apologizing to me for doing what he did.
Oh, good for him, and good for you, and good for Barak, and the whole thing is good for nothing. But looks like there's any good inside there? He nods. All right.
The whole thing's good for nothing. Is that what you said?
I'm often gloomy. Anything happening in the last 7 years you want to mention? Yeah, you're laughing.
No, I could say that I've become much more interested in faith. That's primarily what's occurred in my life. I'm much more faithful man now.
You regularly attend some religious services?
I dismiss religion with everything I can. I do not believe in religions. I believe in faith.
And what do you have faith these days?
The Lord of Hosts, His Son, the book that was written as a good lessons and good teachings.
Calling yourself a Christian, perhaps, or not?
No.
But the book you're referring to is...
I am a follower of the Lord.
But you are referring to...
Christianity is a religion.
But are you referring to the Bible?
Yes, I'm referring to the book.
I got you.
Yes, but I'm also referring to the God that I worship first above all others, and His Son, and the faith that I have in Him. But I just refer to faith. I don't refer to religions.
Well, you certainly have more faith than I do, and I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts with me.
Okay. Well, this is the celebration of Christ today, Christmas.
Not what I'm celebrating, but I imagine it's what others may be celebrating.
Well, that's what it's named after, the celebration of Christ. It is not supposed to be Jesus' birthday. That got twisted up somewhere. They did it at the winter solstice because it's the rebirth, and you can be reborn through Christ.
I think being reborn could be a good thing.
That's the concept. People think, oh, they got Jesus' birthday wrong. It's not supposed to be on Jesus' birthday. It's the winter solstice when everything is reborn.
And we have been talking with?
Philip.
Thanks, Philip. Line is, I'm going into the Museum of Art and History Center. Some folks are coming out. Hello.
Merry Christmas, Robert.
That's what you say. Amen. Ho, ho, ho.
Hey, how are you?
Still kicking.
Good.
Name again, sir?
Merry holidays with bathrobes, Pierre in the house.
And you are?
As usual, getting the on-the-spot what's real. And we've got Pete's pastries and caroling going on the curb. So.
And who are you anyway, sir?
I just said Meriwether Mike.
Ah, actually you didn't. That's the first time you mentioned it, mister.
Well, I must have set it behind my Starbucks Pike's blend, the third place, only place.
What do you think of this
in Santa Cruz?
New location for the meal.
I think it's underrated and oversized. I mean, overrated and undersized. It's already full on in the dining room, so that's good because now they're coming out to the curb for Pete's pastries and caroling.
Thank you, sir. That was Musical Mike. All right, man. Get to work, Plage. Oh, this line is over here. It's a very short line. We got a line of 5 people before the... Hey, why so few people? Any idea? Yeah, but usually the line goes on.
I know. I don't know. Unless people didn't take the time to read the sign on the vet's hall, you know what I mean? A lot of people might not have known it was here, and they put up one little thing on the vet's hall door that said, it's over at Ma. So if people didn't stop to look, maybe people just didn't know. This is the second year, I think, for Christmas here. First year here for Christmas?
Well, I think last year was either at the vet's hall or at the 115 Coral Street, but I'm not sure. So.
Thanksgiving was at the vet's hall.
That's true.
That was a nice turnout.
Well, any thoughts about this occasion for yourself here? We have model trains for people to look at going back and forth.
Isn't that nice, though?
And little commercial vents over here. Looks a little, sort of the upper middle class may have moved in, or the middle class, anyway.
Those things are all for free, aren't they?
Buy a membership and get us something for free.
That's awesome.
What the sign says. Yeah.
Merry Christmas there, Robert.
Now, we'll see about that.
I hope so. I'm Ron.
I'm Robert.
I know. I see you around.
Yeah, well.
You do good work.
So, Ron, are you working for this?
Yeah, I'm
boss. We've been talking with
Mike.
Oh, it's okay.
No, it's okay. I'm just running from person to person.
Catch up with Harry here.
Why the small number of people? I was asking Mike here.
I don't know. You know, I'm surprised. It's certainly not my Thanksgiving.
Very little publicity, perhaps?
I don't know. Maybe a lot of people don't know about it because I went to Veterans Hall, and if I didn't look at the sign, I wouldn't know it's here.
We need to have a much larger sign.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope people get here.
Wish I brought a cardboard along. Yeah. How many years have you, how involved are you with this? You have a cup of coffee in your hand.
I'm going around bossing everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
Are you a Ma man?
No, actually I'm not. I'm just a volunteer. I've come here like 4 or 5 years, and same with the Thanksgiving. So I started when it was over at Civic a few years ago. Remember that?
It started, the Vets Hall was the usual place, but I guess at the Civic.
They were working on it or
yes, something. I remember the Civic. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so you know what? This is fun. I get a lot more out of this than possibly anybody I'm serving for or helping.
Well, good. I'm glad you do, Mike.
You know, I'm blessed in my life. And by the grace of God, go I.
And there you are drinking coffee. Who knows where that's going to lead? talking with
Ron Brady, B-R-A-D-Y.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, man. Aren't you an instrumental figure in this?
No, I have very little to nothing to do for it.
Why so few people here this year?
Well, we serve for 3 hours, so we'll get people all day long.
Right, but look at the line. Almost nobody here.
But the dining room was full.
It is, but that's often the case. So we aren't getting a clear answer. Talking with, this is for Free Radio. What's your name?
Carrie.
Carrie, how many years have you done this? You're on the serving line with the taters and the salad.
I would say I've been doing it for about 10 years since I've been in this town for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Have you ever seen so little a line here? We have no line.
No, never.
What do you make of that?
I don't know. Maybe folks are off doing some different stuff.
You think maybe inadequate publicity? I know there's a sign at the other place, the Veterans Hall.
Maybe not enough advertisement, quite possibly.
All the homeless have been driven out of town, perhaps. Everyone's having a great upturn in the economy under Trump and Mayor Terrazas.
Yes, could be.
You know, Terrazas and Trump, that's my motto.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking with...
Carrie.
Any other thoughts, Carrie? Anything you want to say?
No, just that I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday. The best possible.
And how about the rest of the year? That always, of course, enters in, doesn't it?
That too.
Not too likely with the rents, considering what they are. But
nope.
How are your rents?
Painful.
How many jobs do you work?
I have 2 jobs, and I volunteer at 2 different places.
Here's somebody you can serve, and thank you.
Thank you.
A much smaller dining hall than the Veterans Hall. That looks good, I got to tell you.
I'll follow you over. What do you want to eat?
I'm going to watch for a moment and then look at my stomach and figure out what I want to do. Thank you. I'll probably have some pie at some point. So it looks like the number of people here, and I'm counting the tables, are 20, 40, 60. There's only space for about 80 people here. It's about half, at least less than half the size of the Veterans Hall. And the people who are in here, it's pretty full up, but it's the line of servers is much smaller. Hey, very colorful. It's much smaller than the server line, let's say, at Thanksgiving at the Vets Hall and at earlier years that I remember. Hey, I'm right with you, just to make sure you got some of that left for me here.
Listen, we got more pie than we know what to do with.
Well, listen, you could always sneak out and maybe sell a few pieces.
No, I wouldn't want to.
Here's somebody.
I give them away to those who need it.
Why not?
There you go.
Oh, that pecan pie looks pretty darn good, I got to tell you. Wow, but I haven't had my dinner, so I better wait.
Did you get dinner?
I can't eat much, so I'm going to wait till I really get hungry. So, you know.
Well, you do have a couple hours.
True.
Here's your guess.
I'm waiting for a new automobile, possibly, or a new president would be good.
Sure.
This is my favorite event.
Okay. What? You're the first one to say no.
So people are coming and going, and I'm standing next to a man holding the dessert tray. What's your name?
Phil.
And Phil, have you done this every year?
First time here this year, yeah. I've done it in the Vets Hall a few years back now. But
what do you make of, I keep asking this question, but first of all, the seating capacity is at least less than half that of the Vets Hall,
right.
And the line doesn't exist out there. There's almost nobody there. Usually around 12, you get something of a line, you know. I don't see any line.
They've already put about 150 people through here.
But, I mean, people are not being rushed to get out of here. People are taking their time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, usually there's three or four times as many people, at least in previous years, at any, let's say.
They usually would have, the Vets Hall has it the Thanksgiving. But
right. This
year, I don't know what they did last year. This is the first year I've worked this program.
Right.
So I don't know where they had it last year.
Beth Robespierre.
Sir.
Merry Christmas from Santa.
Oh, ho, ho, ho to you, buddy.
Oh, ho, ho to you, too. Actually, you could pass for Santa yourself.
Oh, that's what they all say, except I'm a little too kind of gray. You got to be white like that guy.
Well, you just bleach it.
That's a possibility. Hello. You know, I see I'm going to steal one of those cookies is what I'm going to do.
That's what they're there for.
And we've been talking with?
Yeah.
Your name again is?
Phil.
Thanks, Phil. I'm Robert. So I'm looking over the population here, and I see mostly, well, I was going to say mostly older folks. I notice the older folks, certainly mostly white folks, so there are a few black folks and Latino folks, and some faces I recognize. Please, they haven't been shouting at me in anger. Some people have always had disagreements. I mean, there's Steve Plage. He's giving out coats to folks. A nice and needed gesture, not just on Christmas. It's really a scaled-down affair, and I guess I can't stop thinking of that. I apologize for being repetitious. There aren't the usual people rushing around picking up plates. There are a few folks in red Christmas shirts with hats who are offering bottles. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Bottles of water.
If there's anyone there has a moment to spare and can give undivided
undivided attention. I'd be grateful if you'd give a minute or two and consider some points I would mention. There are slanderous tongues ever ready to wrong and murder the fine reputation of the lads with big feet who by pounding the beat are protecting the peace of the nation. There are short-sighted folks who insist that these blokes are just uniformed masters of thuggery. There can be no dispute if they didn't put the boot in, the country would soon go to buggery. So try and keep calm when they're twisting your arm or planting a fist in your gum. When they're giving you hell in a cold prison cell, they're only just doing their job. When Hitler and co. were running the show, assisted by Germany's coppers, if a nose was too big or a mind was too active, its owner was sure of the chopper. Socialist, communist, Jews and trade unionists landed up dead or in quad. And the police were in there, of course, doing their share. Ah, but they were just doing their job. Il Duce the bully and Franco his cully both loaded their country with chains. And in the front ranks of these two mountebanks were the police of both Italy and Spain. In South Africa, El Salvador, Guatemala, where they call working people the mob. The screams and the yells from the punishment cells show the police are just doing their job. If you're black but just brown, if you're jobless and down, if you speak for the world which is saner, if you stand up and fight for what's yours by right, if you're an anti-nuclear campaigner, remember the chap in the comical hat is one of humanity's crosses. Wherever there's trouble, whatever the struggle, he'll be on the side of the bosses.